Welcome to Red Ice Creations Radio. This is Henrik Palmgren, and I am your host. I'm also the editor and webmaster of RedIceCreations.com, and we are recording this from the west coast of Sweden, and this is talk radio accessible worldwide over the internet. Check out our website, RedIceCreations.com, for news, our new forum, and our free radio archive dating back to April of this year, and also our subscriber archive dating back to September of this year. Today we got an awesome program with Christopher Morse lined up for you, and Chris is going to be a monthly guest on the show from now on, and he will be on the first Thursday of each month. So today is the first of our monthly updates from the Creative Cosmos, and we're going to talk about Zen and the soul and a whole lot more, so stay tuned for that. And before we get to today's show, I'd like to thank Michael Sharp for being with us last Thursday, talking about the triumph of spirit and also the Anunnaki power structure for our subscribers. Very interesting stuff from Michael Sharp. You can hear that interview simply by becoming a subscriber, and you'll get access to our growing archive of subscriber interviews. If you like what we do here, support this program and sign up if you're already a subscriber. Thank you so much for your support. You keep us going. Today we have Christopher Morse from CreativeCosmos.org back with us, and we are proud to announce that Chris will be a regular on the show from now on, and he will be on the first Thursday of each month, and we're going to have some nice things ahead planned for these shows, and Chris might from time to time jump into the role of co-host or host the program entirely, or we might invite other people, other guests to join us during these shows, or we might just go solo and get these, you know, kind of monthly updates from the creativecosmos.org. And today we have Zen and the Soul as the overarching theme of this program. So I say welcome back to the show, Dr. C, now co-host slash guests on Red Ice Creations Radio. It's very nice to have you here again, my friend.
All right. Great to be here, and love talking to you and your audience, and good to know Frederick's in the background working the boards.
Yeah.
All is well with the world, and we are going to continue exploring, eh?
Absolutely, absolutely. And I, you know, as I was working on the introduction for this program here today, it just hit me. I realized that we are in, you know, in December already. Can you believe it? It's soon, you know, Christmas again, and 2006 will be over. And you know, I mean, just as you mentioned in your mail, I guess I feel, as you said it, out of time, basically. How about you?
Yeah, time. What an interesting phenomenon. You know, more and more I keep it at a distance a little bit. I try to cultivate my own sense of time and my own space. It's part of creating a world around yourself that contributes to well-being, you know, of the pressures of the world and the ways of the world are really fast. And, you know, that's part of why all the stress, you know, time, being bound to time and stress are directly related. And I see that a lot of people, even when they aren't obligated to the calendar or the clock for a specific reason, they still even carry that time consciousness or time bind into everything they do, and it causes them to feel like they're always under the gun and they're rushing, and they make reasons to stress out about, you know. So I try to keep that at a distance and realize that time is an experienceable phenomenon, just like the phenomenons you experience through your five senses, if you can understand how it works. And that also, that's part of one of the basic meditations, you know, that comes in probably through the Buddha, of, you know, being free of the past and the future. You know, if you're not, because that's where the mind that's why the mind exists, is it's always knocking around these different things. Because if you're in the present, if you're you know, okay, we'll move right into the soul coming through the body. Mm-hmm. You know, I also, even when I talk about this, make physical gestures like the soul coming through the body, through the body, where you're actually there, you know, experiencing what's in front of you, then you're not thinking, you know, you're not worrying, you're not stressing out, you're engaged with reality. And if you're constantly in that state of reality, in the moment, in the now, then the mind doesn't engage. It doesn't have time to chew over these old things, which could never be again or could never be in the future. You know, people worry about the past, and then they project that past into a possible future. But by the nature of life and change, whatever they think the future could be, it never is. We will always see that be the case.
Yeah, that's really fascinating that you say that, because I was thinking about this concept, you know, of fear, and that's exactly what it is. And what you mentioned is kind of, at least for me, the solution to kind of bypass fear, you know, if you were able to see every moment just as it is and not, as you say, filter it through past experiences or future projections. You can take every moment that occurs for what it is and don't have any kind of fear related to it. So, yeah, amazing.
So, I mean, that fear lives in the mind. That's where it is. And so rather than trying to deal with each symptomatic demonstration of the fear, we'll never solve it by then, but we have to even understand deep inside what even makes the fear possible is that we give up control, and we give up the control because of our own our ego, our hurts, that's why we have to clean, to truly be free of the past. This is another thing to that it comes into play. To be free of that past, we have to face up to it as well. You know, part of what people fret about in that mind that makes the fear possible is that they didn't, some part of themselves was not able to have expression in the past, and so they're wounded, and so then they're protecting that wound. You know, they're afraid of it being wounded in the same way. They have yet to recover that personal strength of where they can maintain their own health by having come to understand what it is to be human and the rights we do have. You know, many people don't even know they have the right to kind of push back, so to speak, or to kind of get this stuff out, and to, you know, sometimes you have to hold it at bay pretty strongly, and sometimes it isn't always the most pleasant thing in the world to deal with. You know, it's there's a lot of pressures that are perceived in the mind when one begins dismantling it. You know, you really have to hold strong, especially in the early stages, because mind almost takes on a life of its own, you know, and some of the habits that, this is why one can speak about the habits in the mind once they've deconstructed their own mind and come to know these traps. Well, often the traps in the minds of the others are very similar, and you can bring up points about what the mind's doing and how it justifies itself and how it eliminates or excludes many possibilities, but it's really convinced of the reality of its own perspective. But that itself is the greatest danger, because it deludes us into thinking that that's reality, and then when we live that way, we are not expressing the wholeness of ourselves, and so it's always going to be a part of ourself lost. You know, that's why so many people have this kind of dark side, this secret side that comes out and takes revenge.
Exactly. One thing that came to mind here was we're kind of in this, it feels like we're kind of in this, psychological dark age, basically. I mean, when we're young, we learn, you know, how to eat and how to, you know, take care of our bodies and all this stuff. And I know that, you know, Michael Sarr, and I have mentioned this a few times, that we also need to, you know, learn to psychologically, you know, cleanse ourselves and this kind of stuff. And this is, of course, not an easy process, but it feels like it would be, we certainly have much more knowledge at our disposal than we are actually are distributing, especially to, I guess, young people. I mean, how we can deal with certain psychological aspects of ourselves and how we react and why we react. So, I mean, this psychological dark age, I hope we can, you know, kind of come out of that soon and begin to, you know, deal with these aspects in a serious way. But I guess that a society that in one sense don't even recognize the spiritual aspects of humans.
This is the kind of difficult question that you know, we doing this work face. You know, sometimes it's really hard, and sometimes what we're talking about, I mean, basically, you know, the psychological dark age, that fear comes into play. It's the fear of the knowledge that you're talking about.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're not afraid and you go where the truth leads you and where the information leads you, it's not even something that you need any kind of belief in or a leap of faith in at all. It's clearly evidence that in humanity continues to progress, and the ways we're progressing now are not so much the physical evolution. You know, we don't really need anything else, because as it is, the human body is perfect for this place.
Yeah.
You know, and so we've done it that way, and now we need to continue to evolve the other dimensions of incarnation, you know, to bring, you know, up till now, souls haven't really had the freedom to move into the bodies yet. You know, sometimes it happens here or there, but mostly it's just like a small piece. A person's incarnation is just so specific to what they experienced in their life. But if you can open up to these higher energies, it just gets broader and broader and broader and unimaginably vast, and to see the universe we're in. And you know, it isn't that one thing we have at our advantage is the fact that, well, it's the truth. It is what it is. So it will come out. It will find its way out. I mean, eventually... Yeah. It always comes around. You can't say it's something else and change it. It will be what it is. And so, in that sense, we're talking sense.
Yeah, sure. So, I mean, we're taking the first kind of unbalanced steps into this area, at least, I guess, in recorded history of the human race, or what we know of. I mean, this might have been going on for several times over in the, you know, millions of years that I guess the, you know, the entire universe have been around. But how do you think we can, you know, help more this process, because it's not an easy thing if we are, you know, left alone, I guess, to this process and discovering all these things ourselves.
Well, one thing that is good to remember is that even historically, we aren't alone. You know, there are the great spiritual people and philosophers. You know, you could, I mean, it changes how you look at it when you see that, you know, Buddha, Jesus, Pythagoras, Socrates, and on, even to some of the modern prophet types of and Osho and Yogananda and Barry Long and on to, you know, we're building upon that base that they forged brick by brick over many, many years. And also you include the artists, the Michelangelos and the Da Vincis and the musicians, the Beethovens and the Bachs and, you know, all these, and many people in many walks of life that have contributed something to the spiritual side of man, to the ultimate side of our nature, that, you know, and it may be sometimes in the past it didn't quite have the freedom that we have now to just run with it, because we have it all at our disposal. You know, it made it took a manifest and still very specifically through the person and the place and the time, and that's where we get art that is related to the time period and how we can study that as indicative of the society in which it took place. You know, it's a reflection of it, but we can get to the point now where we take all of that stuff and soak it up as merely colors of the palette that we can play with, because we no longer have to even think that way. We have we have the capability to get space from the mind, where the mind doesn't have to be grinding on thoughts, as we began with here, like just thinking, because you can even see in the eyes, the dullness of the eyes, how the energy is turned in and gripped and not flowing and not well and not healthy, and then that person is giving off kind of a, you know, a bummer kind of a radiation, and then that creates bummers in their life, which then reinforces what they believe, and then they get caught up in that cycle. And that's why sometimes we have to say, hey, I'm your friend, have a look at this.
Exactly. And and as we alluded to earlier, you know, regarding time and stuff like this, I know that the, you know, the Mayan calendar, of course, describes and kind of this increase in time in the years here leading up to 2012. And I would guess that this also would tie in with some of the stress, I can imagine, that many people, and including myself, I can feel this sometime if I don't kind of ease down and try to, you know, center myself. I feel how easy it is to get carried away in the stressful moment, right, so to speak. And but again, the Mayan calendar describes this increase in time. Do you think that this could be a huge part for why people are, you know, stressed without the fact that they don't need to be stressed?
Yeah, I think that's part of that threshold of the evolution, is that compression will, you know, it's that the increase in time is how it manifests to us. It might not be exactly what it is as it's coming through. It might just be, you know, the kind of vibrate, you know, oh shit. but it kind of turns the screws. It makes the pressure build up until, you know, it kind of forces you to pop out, you know.
Yeah, yeah, sure.
It gets people searching, you know. The people that are searching because of that pressure. So in a sense, you can see the pressure as a gift. And you have to remember the perspective that when you feel those things, you see them as a call to attention. You get the, you know, you allow it to provoke awareness. So each time it happens, you go, ah, space, you know, and pretty soon you don't have to remember anymore, and you're just like, space, everything's got, you know. So whether it's going slow or fast or chaotic or whatever, it's all still at a distance.
Yeah, so all of these moments are, you know, opportunities to tie everything back to the source and relax. We should rather learn from this than to try to, you know, fight it or be afraid of it, I guess.
Well, it's one way of going about turning something that could be very scary and dark into a positive thing that strengthens your life and continues the growth process.
And of course, our topics here today was, you know, Zen and the soul, and to maybe begin to tie this into the discussion here.
Yeah.
I mentioned earlier, you know, that I don't know that much about, you know, the basic, you know, concepts of Zen. So maybe we could, you know, go through that a little bit.
All right.
Where do we begin? What is Zen?
Well, that's the funny thing about Zen, you know, that when you're talking about it or you're describing it, and they all say that you immediately betray what it is, you know. So that's why there's so many strange answers to questions like that. So, like, appropriate response to what is Zen might be, or something. But we can take it and look at it in that way, you know. I explored it early on by reading a lot of books and hanging around people that had made Zen a part of their lives, you know.
Yeah.
And the thing about Zen is that it's so accessible. It's the most accessible thing in the world. You know, maybe sometimes we Zen conjures images or makes people, they think it's kind of strange and foreign, or, you know, it's not a normal part of what they've seen in life, so they naturally have a little bit of suspicion, or, you know, they're uncertain about it, you know. And so that's why I like to take it and just kind of present it in the way that it occurs to me, and it coming through modern society and modern university and seeing all the TV stuff and watching the emergence of the internet and having logged in hours of video games and, you know, been right in the heart of America as a Generation X person. I've seen it all go down. I know what's going on from the ground level, and I see what it's doing to people and how people think. And coming to understand this, then it just helps you be able to speak that language and take these concepts from other traditions and translate them, you know.
Yeah. Do you know if the concept behind them, how old are those? Can we, you know, track the source of this, so to speak?
Well, yeah. Well, you see, you know, the mystic traditions essentially in a lot of different places exhibited what amounts to Zen. It's the Taoist tradition of Lao Tzu, you know, maybe that's 3000 BC or before, or even some of the Vedic traditions of India that go, some say go back 190,000 years or more, you know. Because it's not that, the key thing about it, and this is why I want to talk about it, because we need to really keep this aspect out there, that it's not a philosophy like a Christianity, or where you've got a system of beliefs or rules or whatever. And even we see maybe monks doing meditations and such, but that's not Zen either. That's simply a tool of which makes it so that the individual can eventually come to know Zen. You know, Zen is a lot more about the Zen stick, you know, a slap on the face, or you know, something that startles you, that breaks the habits. And, you know, a lot of the meditations, you know, a lot of what Buddha talks about is the negating that which is keeping you from seeing what is. Zen is what is, and what is not what everybody tends to think is. You know, they see things and they concretize it in their mind, and they're so certain of their environment. You go from box to box, room to room, and you're all the same things you see all the time, you know, a radio, a TV, all the same people complaining about the same crap, you know, the same ride to the same places, you know, on. And I mean, and people just get, it's not even in their lexicon, it's not even in their vision that they even have, that you can even consider things free of that or another way, you know. And it doesn't have to be something, you know, a life-changing catastrophe that makes one search for spirit. And one thing also that cuts people off is they believe they have spirituality accounted for in their belief system. So they just have this formula of how to get to heaven or whatever, and so they never begin their search, which is kind of the darker side of propagating dogma.
Yeah. I mean, and you mentioned this in your, I think your latest article, entitled Still Naked in the Garden, and I think that you go into this a little bit, because this is about, you know, the spirituality in connection with Christianity, and that the, I guess, the mystical tradition of you know, the aspects of Jesus have kind of been lost here. So would like to elaborate more further on that.
I think I mentioned this on our subscriber series interview, of just a little bit of this aspect of what we can go into here about Jesus, the the person, the teacher, the sage, the philosopher, the person who is an artist just like you and me, you know, talking about what you and I are talking about right now to the people around him, you know. Maybe he's almost like an early blogger or something. Jesus the blogger. You know, his parables are like posting the articles. You know?
Yeah.
He's telling the stories and people gathering around. And what can you do? You know, that bridge to the people that don't know anything sometimes is, you know, it's hard to build that bridge, or it's a long way. And so you got to find ways to reach the people. And, you know, going through the process and coming to know the process, you know, through experiencing your own transformation, you can see Jesus in a different light as one who went through that. And going through that, there's certain, you know, let's say common ground. You know, let's say there was a brand new roller coaster ride that was just totally crazy, you know, unprecedented, and one of your friends goes and then gets off the ride, and then you go like an hour later, and then you come back and you look at each other and you both understand that that ride was crazy and you went through something, and you share that comment. Yeah, I went through the ride. I did the ride. You know? And it's not such a bogged down, dreary, serious kind of thing. You know, these people, if they're went through this process, they're going to have a sense of humor, and they're not going to be all serious and judgmental and dark. You know, some of them might be pretty intense and pretty heavy and overwhelming. If you were to approach them, they'd scare the crap out of you, but they're not going to be, you know, dark or mean. Or, you know, there's certain things you can just count on that, you know, they'll be cool, you know.
Yeah, sure, absolutely. And it feels like we certainly have talked about this earlier in previous shows too, but again, I think it's important to stress this point that so many things in our, you know, day-to-day life, and especially how we live in the Western world, is all about this repetitive pattern of our, you know, of what we do with our lives. I mean, if you sit down and think about it, how we live our lives, you know, going to the perhaps the same job over and over, and as you said, you know, taking the same roads to that work, and we're really in this very enclosed environment. And it's not that you need physically to you know, go out and travel the world to be able to experience more things, but this reflects, I think, the inside of many people too, because it's always the same repetitive thoughts over and over. And I guess that this is when, I guess, Zen comes into the picture to help people break out of the patterns and the mold. Zen could be a way to, I guess, awaken people, right?
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, as far as I can see, that is what you come to when you awaken. You know, Zen is just it's like a word, you know, and that's what they always try to say, not to apply too much like, yes, Zen is this, and Zen is that, and Zen is a series of whatnots, and then you come to the another thing, et cetera, blah, 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 you know. Zen itself is like that. The opposite, not even the opposite, just not that stuff. Right? it's like no matter how much it's more about plane of operation than about the words I'm saying.
Yeah,
so
every
word is more like a attempt to kind of lift it out, put it in this kind of perspective, which will shake things up. Which, you know, so it's like Zen is a not gaining. That's an aspect to bring up, is it's not acquiring more. It's not more knowledge in the sense that we scour through 50 more websites today, 50 more the next day. Oh, Zen, bam, I got that. Blah, you know, because Zen is just that little drop that goes all the way to the bottom, you know. It cuts through the crap, you know. It opens that space of where it gives your heart a little bit of room to move, you know. With part of that pressure that you experience, it, if feel that because their heart's not fully open yet. It's not, you know, they feel, oh, I can't move. I can't be myself. I can't do what I want to do. And how am I going to get out of this? How am I, oh, man, I don't have the strength to get out of this. Oh, man, and this, oh, it's just, you know, another thing I have to take care of and tomorrow and this and that. And, oh, you know, that the answer is to open up your heart and sing, you know, is to get that out. I'm unashamed. I'm here. I'm alive. And it's going to be this way. You know, to stand behind yourself and to stand behind those energies and to value them. Because one thing that is so difficult is they're not going to be recognized or validated necessarily by those around you. And so it's real slow to get going. It's not nourished. It's not fostered. And that's why we turn to, you know, all websites that maybe bring some of the information that helps, or why we turn to the books written by great masters, because we're seeking that empathy or that understanding or that somebody else who knows and can relate to what we're going through.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, to tie in perhaps the discussion or the theme of you know, the soul, I guess, that as long as we have fall into these repetitive patterns, I mean, we obviously are not expressing the, I don't know if you agree on that or not, of course, but are we expressing the true, you know, kind of journey of our soul if we fall into the mold of, I guess, you know, being in a job from day to day out and not following our heart and not doing what we, you know, I guess supposed to do, or is that a much big part of the journey also, or do we want to exclude something here as being important in our lives?
All right. The habit is definitely an inhibitor. The habit, it comes from the outside. I mean, that's how we differentiate whether it's coming from ourselves or our own inclination, or whether it's something you can trace to having been started by an outside phenomenon. So one of the first things I did when I had my had become self-conscious in this process is I searched through every single thing in my subconscious and search to see if it came from the outside. So a lot of the things that people think about that give them the tension were essentially planted there from the outside, some kind of an expectation or a pressure or a role or you know, a million and one different things that people come to internalize, and they don't understand yet that life can be otherwise, that doesn't have to define them, that they have a right to say, all right, it stops. I have my own way and my own you know, life and creation and path, and and people don't even understand what that means because they always relate it to what they perceive it to be, you know. So you can say, hey, I have a different way. They don't realize the implications of it, that, you know, I'm not going to be rushing all around, or I'm not always going to keep such a tight calendar, or I'm not always going to do anything. I just take it as she goes, and I can speak in likelihoods or, you know, quite possible or, you know, things like that, but I never know what's going to happen. Not that you can't keep an appointment if you need to, but it's more an approach, an attitude of looseness to those things. Of course, we can turn our attention to meet details anytime we want. Better than ever, because we can just, we're not always draining our energy, and whenever we want to, we can just go, turn our attention to something.
Really focus, I guess,
Yeah.
Interesting, and I mean, again, that feels like, you know, something a lot of people feel like a dangerous thing if you know, people begin to, you know, kind of break off these, the change of all the patterns that we are set up for ourselves. And I guess that one fear could be, you know, that if people begin to do as, you know, they would please, or as their heart would please, the entire society would basically collapse on itself. What's your take on that? I mean, what will happen if
Yeah, well, the first thing is what we have now is created by mankind throughout history. It's a man-made philosophy, or, you know, really even maybe a coping mechanism to what the emerging consciousness has found itself dealing with. And, you know, maybe up to this point it's been necessary to kind of hold some of the darker aspects of humanity back, you know, some of these inclinations, because these laws being made of man and the mind of man don't include the universal laws or the heart or the soul or the spirit. Yeah. And so in order to, I mean, that's part of what we're doing is creating the bridge of understanding, which makes it possible for these ideas to be integrated into the systems we have in place and to kind of lift out of it. And because what ends up happening, right now we have an order. And you say this is kind of the danger of fascism, so to speak, because it's like an absolute order.
Yeah.
But it's an imposed order. It's an oppression because it's by, essentially by force. It's holding it, holds everything down, holds everything back. And yes, you might have a one kind of order. That's kind of taking that worldly order to the extreme.
Yeah.
And that would be the worst case scenario. That would be worse than any kind of, you know, where the freedom would be coming out. You know, first in taking, making the transfer, we have to kind of transform the pain as society. You know, we talk about it as individuals going through the meditative process and looking at our subconscious and releasing this energy and transforming it and moving it forward.
Yeah.
But we have to apply that to society as a whole. And this goes back to what we chatted about earlier about what kind of what we're doing with our work and how we're forging new territory. Well, we're building those ground, you know, we're building the circumstance that can make it so these ideas are accepted on a wider scale, because again and again we present so much evidence and clarity and you know, just intelligence in the way we approach it, that it's you know, eventually it just becomes taken as part of the whole because it's true.
Yeah. And exactly as you said regarding, you know, fascism and stuff like this, because it feels like, you know, the more darker aspects of human fear is that we wouldn't, you know, have control or being able to, I guess, control ourselves if we are just to let go. I mean, of course, I'm reminded of the, you know, famous you know, Darth Vader in one of the Star Wars movies. He says, you know, that the only thing he wants is to, you know, achieve order in the universe, basically. So, I mean, he represents this, you know, archetypal evil dude, you know, that brings this.
Yeah.
I mean, this is, I guess, the same concept of order out of chaos. That's also one of those things. And I think that it was Carl Johan Kallman who said, a Swedish author who wrote a book about the Mayan calendar, who said, took this into aspect that after the year 2012, what we had to do to kind of get over this threshold was to move into an area of a more divinely guided anarchy. And and I think that's a really
beautiful... Well, it's also,
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. It makes me think of this aspect of it, that there is a... Well, first of all, you know, you don't, as opposed to Darth here, we don't need to impose order on the galaxy because there already is order in the galaxy.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's exactly how Zen is kind of like backwards or different than what, you know, the way we normally think, is that we could simply stop doing everything that puts us out of order.
Yeah.
Then we will be in order. I mean, that's what following our nature is. And, you know, sometimes you hear people talk about, you know, God's plan or how are we ever going to fix this mess? Well, we fix the mess by releasing that which is natural in us, because we're all brought here already with the mission that would make the difference, that would save the world, that would heal the planet and establish some kind of way of relating that will last in perpetuity, just some way to keep it humming and to keep it healthy, to keep the world organism flowing the way it needs to, you know. So once we, you know, we all maybe have to express some of this pain and face some of this pain and face some of the things we avoid talking about openly, like sex and death and, you know, some of the suffering that we all keep hidden and obscured and, you know, because that's what causes us to lash out, which is why there's the laws to hold them down.
Yeah.
You see, once we clear all these things out, well, when you become tuned into life and part of all things, you don't harm a life, and you have an internal sense of how to carry yourself, you know, how to be a representative of the divine on earth. You know, you won't, if you go through that process, you couldn't be a criminal. You know, you would be manifesting both a living example of what it's like to manifest truth, to live in harmony with your spirit and to actualize your potential. In fact, there'd be far greater creative and beautiful order if this was set free on a whole nother scale, you know. And I think it is being set free in some, and, you know, like you say, this is the early stages. You know, we're still getting the ball rolling, and more people are popping up. And it's funny, we all recognize each other. It's like, yeah, I see, you know, we are the same. We're doing the same because we connected to life are connected to each other, and we're all building on this and the work of all who've come before and invigorating it. You know, it's like, rather than believing in one small thing, take it up as your own and bring it to the world, bring it to life, and add your own divine spark in the present, in a circumstance, because that's what the world needs right now.
Yeah, absolutely. And I love that you know, say that there is, you know, order in the universe already, because it feels like there are also kind of these competitive views on things. I mean, either you can see nature as this, you know, competitive kind of destructive force that, you know, that kills parts of itself to survive, kind of feeding on itself, or you can see nature as this nurturing aspect that provides itself with aspects to allow itself to grow. And I mean, in one sense, they're both true, but still the underlying theme is that there is order to these methods, even if we are, you know, aware enough not to spot them or not, so to speak.
Yeah, it's like the silence helps us to, the silence is to create a buffer against all that which is from the outside that we've internalized, all the confusion. Get to that silence, then our focus is not on the outside, and it creates that space where we then start to realize this whole other set of possibilities, of universes, of rules, you know, not rules in a post set, but like, you know, tendencies or way things are, universal law or higher principles of existence. You know, there's just so much in there. And silence is like the gateway, is the pathway, is the means to connect.
Yeah.
And it seems so simple, but it's one of the hardest things to do, to literally sit there unoccupied for long periods of time.
I think that's...
Because at first... Yeah. At first you'll have great resistance, you know.
Yeah. I mean... I had it, you know, watching TV the other day, and was this commercial, of course it was for a radio, a music station, of course. I mean, it's not so strange that they had this approach to it, but still it kind of reflected this mentality that it was a guy sitting in a room, basically quiet, I think it was a girlfriend who came into the room and kind of was disturbed at the fact that it was so quiet in the room, so she had to turn on the radio. It's like, does it have to be so quiet, you know? this is really the kind of I guess, difficult part for many, because there's a real nervousness as soon as it becomes quiet. It's just like, you know, embarrassing, what do they call it? Embarrassing moments when it turns quiet, basically, in a discussion between two people or something. So, I mean, silence
is
difficult. Yeah, go ahead, yeah.
Yeah, some people even take personal offense to that silence, because they'll project their own, you know, feelings about it and attribute it to you. That's one of the difficult things too. You know, if you have that, and that's part of what we said, you as the meditator going through this experience have to understand that, you know, people don't always know how to respond to it. You know, they think it's just so foreign to them, it freaks them out, and what also happens if they come near that silence, well, their own suppressions start coming to the surface, because if they're around silence, that's why they need that occupied mind, is to keep all this stuff back that they're not facing, you know, because we don't have to do anything to find what's wrong and heal ourselves. We're already doing way too much to hold it all back.
Exactly.
And as soon as we stop holding it back, it all comes right out. And then if someone's around silence, well, it's hard to hold it back, and it starts cutting loose, and that scares people, because that's exactly what they're hiding from.
Yeah, and this stuff piles up too, and when the dams break, it's going to be an awful mess in some cases if you hold it back too long.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's why creating safe outlets for what is backed up is the way to go. You know, where if you teach people meditation or ways to process this backlog of pressure, then it will be resolved peacefully, and we will be able to course correct, so to speak, quite easily. It's all just resistance to the process which makes it so difficult.
Yeah. So we have to learn to, again, just go with the flow. I guess that's what you're saying here.
Yeah. Go with the flow, and also that, not in such a, you know, not only in a kind of a way that people might say, oh yeah, I'll go with the flow, do whatever I want kind of a thing, but going with the flow is a very deep commitment and a kind of an attitude towards life, you know, a way of being, so to speak, where you have surrendered kind of your own personal gain, you know, your ego desires things for you, and you live what you see, you live what you comes up in you, you know, even to the point of where you just have faith that if you follow that through and you go into the unknown, that it will be what it needs to be, and to hold into that strength and to create. That's the kind of strength you have to create the new, to forge space where something new can occur. And until we bring something new, express something new, sing our own voice, you know, our own part in the universal chorus, we won't be at peace. We won't be settled. You know, it's really finding that song of the soul is what will bring peace to the earth.
Hmm. Beautiful. But now we have this, I read your wonderful article on, you know, now we have this cult of cash, basically, preventing everything from, I guess, from this new to kind of fully bloom, I guess. I mean, how does this cult of cash tie into this? I mean, you wrote a wonderful article, and I put it up on my website, of course. But, I mean, do you want to elaborate on that a little bit?
Yeah, I can, you know, because it's really pervasive here in America. Because it's almost like the religion. The true religion of America is the capitalist way, you know, even all the holidays are tied in with the store season, and they're all designed to get people to cycle through and you know, their purchasing cycles, and that's even how it's portrayed on the news, you know, the American consumer, and it's always praised, and it's always, you know, really reinforced in many different ways that, you know, and also it's as if that money or having money justifies almost anything. That becomes, so getting the money becomes the decider of whether you are doing, you know, that, I guess just accumulating money is your living philosophy rather than any kind of a center or moral feeling or connection to life. So it's really dangerous because it really takes you and really disconnects you from spirit, from your own heart and from your own soul and from life, you know.
Yeah.
So really that is the thing to fear. You know, you mentioned earlier, is it kind of scary to let it go free? Well, it's much scarier to be that far disconnected and that far off base, just seeking empty means, you know, something that never will give the fulfillment, you know, will always be a dead end.
We have to have to prevent that. I mean, I can recall that we here in Sweden each after each Christmas season we kind of get these reports on you know how well it has gone comparatively to, you know, previous seasons. I mean, do you have that kind of stuff over there too?
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah. And economic data is what they judge the health of the nation on. Nothing, you know, almost nothing else that ends up taking over so much, you know, and that's, you know, the end results are it changes the mindset. You know, some of the security thing, even the idea that we can attain security kind of stems from money, you know, that we can somehow hold everything at bay and not face life as it is. And, you know, there's a more overt aspect about it, but there's also a more subtle aspect of where you've got people that are basically good people who, you know, they're influenced by it. It just becomes part in an aspect of their thinking, and it colors things, and it does cause them worry. You know, what gave rise to me writing that article is just watching people I know and love worry about these things because they still believe in the necessity to do the things of the world in relation to money. And it's not that you don't do these things, it's that you don't allow it to govern your personal way of living, what means something to you, you know. So later way back you said something about, can the person just working the everyday job be all right? Well, if they've externalized all this and gotten all this out and come to know themselves, then they can choose to do that and it will be fine. But unless they've expressed that, those routines can become a blockage to setting the spirit free.
Absolutely. And it feels like the same, to tie in with money here, it feels like the same aspects of this goes into the insurance business and stuff like this, because again it's fear based because we don't trust that the universe will supply us with means so we can survive, but instead we get an insurance for these kinds of things, and I think that it wrecks the thinking and the kind of spiritual approach to life in general, that kind of economic system and insurance.
Yeah, you can even go farther and say that creates the reality in which the accidents occur. You know, you're kind of visualizing that. You know, when you buy the insurance, you're almost assuming there's going to be an accident. Otherwise,
exactly.
Why would you go through that?
Yeah, absolutely. And then you can, and at that point, you begin to manifest, you know, that people might, you know, steal from you, or that you might wreck something or stuff like this.
Which goes to how you, again, your attitude towards the world.
Yeah. By the way, Chris, we are, you know, rapidly approaching our end of the time here today. And before we do that, I would like to, you know, again, refer people to your website. And you have, you know, a few books out there. And I want you to tell us about them. But before we do that, do you have you're working on a third book right now? Is that correct?
Oh yeah, there's a number of projects I'm working on. I have a kind of a backlog. You know, if you get into the mode of creating a lot, sometimes you'll write down ideas and things will be in different stages of creation.
And
but over time you start seeing several you know, projects emerge.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
You know, I've spoken before about how I'm very, you know, I do have a roots in the European tradition and the music traditions and the art traditions, and you know, I feel one thing myself that I would like to write a symphony, which is going to be both a book. It's going to be a book in three movements and also an orchestral piece in three movements.
Yeah. Very nice.
And there are a couple of things. Yeah, there are a couple of things I want to do with that. You know, the book is going to have a kind of an autobiographical section, and then a Zen section, and then a section about some of the transcendence ideas that I work out on my site. And
that's
transcendenceworldmovement.com. Anyone wants to check out that? It's another side project of mine, cultivating some ideas about how to escape the duality of mind and apply some of these spiritual principles to real life and the machinations of how we organize things, you know, to do it in a creative way and not in that forced way that we spoke of earlier.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And of course, your main site at this point is creativecosmos.org, and you have a few books there, and you got a store too. And tell us about your books before we end here.
Yeah. Well, the Pearly Gates Press books are, I think they're a lot of fun, and I think anybody who wants to explore the astral plane or expose themselves to provocations, like we talked about, these things that open doorways of awareness or speak to truth in you to get to shake things loose, or to just being exposed to these things, we are then able to see for ourselves. Maybe something we didn't even know was possible, you know. So these are really neat. The Pearly Gates Press, Volume 1, 2, and 3 is coming out very soon. And you can get those at Creative Cosmos Gift Shop.
Awesome. Are you still there, Chris?
Yep.
Okay. I thought we went dark here again. So, I mean, we're having some trouble here with Skype today. But okay, so Chris, I mean, again, thank you for coming on, spending some time with us, and I'm looking forward very much to next month, and let's continue this wonderful tradition. Okay.
Yeah, me too, and I'm very happy to be such a big part of Red Ice Creations Radio, and I really honor and respect all the guests you've had on and the work that you and Frederick are doing, and keep it up, and together we'll get this information out there.
Thank you very much, Chris.
Thank you.
Chris will be back with us the first Thursday of 2007, so don't miss that show. This Sunday we have a very interesting program with Florin Diaco. This was a tip from one of our listeners, and Florin has written a book entitled The Lost Millennium, History's Timetables Under Siege. And just as the title implies, Florin has a theory that the official historical timetable might be incorrect. This is fascinating stuff, so tune in again this Sunday if you want to hear more about that. Thank you all for listening to the program, and a big thanks to all our wonderful subscribers out there who help to keep this program going. Also thanks to producer and technician Fredrik Palmgren. Take it easy and take care. This is Henrik Palmgren. We will talk soon.